Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Good morning. Back to school. Opening day for the nation's largest school district. Kids in New York City heading back to class. The school year now officially in session from coast to coast with COVID raging. Just ahead, the rising caseload for children, the fierce debate over masks, and when will the vaccine be available for kids under 12? We'll ask the director of the CDC and the Secretary of Education when they join us exclusively for a special town hall event live on our plaza. Taking aim, yet another tropical storm targeting the Gulf Coast, including parts of the South left ravaged by Ida. Millions bracing this morning for heavy rain and widespread flooding. Al's got the very latest on the forecast just ahead. Never forgotten, America pausing over the weekend to mark 20 years since 9/11. And this morning, the key question, two decades later, are we safer with the war in Afghanistan over and the Taliban now back in control? Richard Engel is live on the ground in Kabul. All eyes on California. Governor Gavin Newsom making a last-minute push to save his job on the eve of the state's historic recall election. Straight ahead, the choice facing voters that could have a ripple effect on politics and both parties nationwide. All that, plus day in court, the key hearing being held today in the sexual abuse lawsuit facing Prince Andrew. But will he ever face questions under oath? We're live with the very latest. And what a weekend. The NFL returns with a bang on the first Sunday of the season. And in tennis, next-gen young stars Daniil Medvedev and 18-year-old Emma Raducanu cap their remarkable runs at the U.S. Open. And both champions join us today, Monday, September 13th, 2021.
From NBC News, this is Today with Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb, live from Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
And hi, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Today. It is Monday morning. We're so glad to have you with us.
We're going to get to the reason that we are standing here with all of these wonderful people in a moment. They are parents. They are educators. We're going to talk about it. But my gosh, tennis this weekend. Girl.
Oh, my gosh.
You were in that number, yeah, watching in person.
A little bit of everything this weekend. We had football, but what a thrilling finish to the U.S. Open, too. Daniil Medvedev won his first major title with a stunning win. It ended Djokovic's quest to become the first person in 52 years to win all four Grand Slams in a calendar year. That was the men's side.
Yeah, on the women's side, boy, was it a real barn burner. Two teen titans facing off for the title for the first time since 1999. We are going to talk to the winner of that match. We fell in love with her, Emma Raducanu, and we'll also speak with the men's champion, too, in just a little bit.
Meanwhile, all eyes this morning on the Gulf Coast once again. Storm warnings and watches are in effect, this time from Nicholas, packing another serious flood threat to those areas still reeling from Ida. Al is tracking all of that.
But we are going to begin with the coronavirus. Delta and other variants are still sweeping across the country. And as students return to in-person learning, including here in New York City this morning.
Of course, a lot of parents are asking, when will kids under 12 be eligible for this vaccine? We're going to focus on that question and more with the head of the CDC and the Secretary of Education during our live COVID in the Classroom town hall. We've also got parents here, students, teachers joining us right here in New York, also across the country. Classrooms across the country, students and teachers and parents are going to have their say.
They've flown in from all over. I know you're from Oklahoma. Where are you from?
Westchester.
Well, close by and far away. We got them all. But we're going to start with NBC's Stephanie Gosk. She's got the very latest. Hey, Steph, morning.
Hoda, good morning. This is going to be a big test for New York City and its fight against the Delta variant. School doors swinging wide open, welcoming students back today. But unlike last year, families are not going to have a remote option. Everyone's got to go. And at elementary schools, at least, the vast majority of students are not vaccinated.
This morning, more students are heading back into the classroom.
I'm really excited.
In New York City, today is the first day of school. Remote learning no longer an option for the district's roughly 1 million students, and some parents are outraged.
It's just not safe. It's absurd to me.
All city schools will now have extra COVID precautions, including mandatory masking, 2 air purifiers in every classroom, and 3 feet of social distancing where possible. All teachers and staff must be vaccinated, but vaccines are not mandatory for eligible students. It comes as COVID cases among kids are rising exponentially, with more than 750,000 new cases reported in less than a month. The FDA says it's working around the clock, supporting trials on vaccines for younger kids. Pfizer board member and former FDA director Scott Gottlieb predicting that could come as soon as next month.
You could potentially have a vaccine available to children age 5 to 11 by Halloween.
But for now, the FDA is warning parents not to seek unapproved shots for children under 12 who remain too young to get vaccinated, saying children are not small adults, while pointing to ongoing pediatric clinical trials. This as President Biden faces resistance from some Republicans to his new vaccine mandates, some threatening legal action.
This is an unprecedented assumption of federal mandate authority.
Somebody shouldn't have to make the choice between keeping their job and getting a jab in the arm. I mean, it's just wrong.
White House officials doubling down.
From the beginning, the president and all of us have said we've got to use every lever we have in order to fight this pandemic.
But vaccine pushback is still spreading. One New York hospital now temporarily shutting down their maternity ward, saying they can't safely deliver babies after at least 6 staffers quit because of a vaccine mandate.
Healthcare workers here in the state of New York have to have that vaccine by September 27th. As for the vaccine for kids, the FDA says they're waiting on the official applications from the pharmaceutical companies. When they get them, it'll be a matter of weeks, not months. Savannah?
All right, Stephanie Goss leading us off. Stephanie, thank you.
Another major story this morning is Tropical Storm Nicholas. It's taking aim at the Gulf Coast once again. Parts of Texas already flood-ravaged. Louisiana bracing for days of heavy rain and really strong winds. Al's here with the track and the timing of this one. The timing is not good.
Yeah, they don't need this. And it's really, really going to be more of a rain event that we're more worried about in the flooding than the winds. Right now, Nicholas is 45 miles southeast of the mouth of the Rio Grande, 60-mile-per-hour winds. It's moving north-northwest at 14 miles per hour. They do have hurricane watches up from Freeport, Texas, just south of and to the east of Corpus Christi. And that's because this could intensify to a very low Category 1 storm. But whatever it is, it's going to bring a lot of heavy rain, making landfall somewhere to the east of Corpus Christi sometime late Monday, early Tuesday morning, and then continuing on and starting to rain itself out as it moves its way into Mississippi by Thursday. But in the meantime, we do have storm surges for up to 3 to 5 feet, shoreline flooding accompanied by dangerous waves, life-threatening surge, and that rip current. And we've got the risk of a high risk of flooding, Port O'Connor, Texas to Freeport. But look at the moderate risk all the way back to New Orleans for flash flooding, rainfall amounts anywhere from 7 to 8 inches. But we could have isolated amounts of 20 inches of rain, Lake Charles, Alexandria, still a heavy amount down into New Orleans and Houston as well. So flooding is going to be the thing, guys, that we are most worried about, which, of course, these areas have already been hard hit, especially in southwestern Louisiana. Yeah.
All right, Al, we'll keep you posted there. Meantime, the nation paused over the weekend to mark 20 years since the terror attacks of 9/11, led by solemn tributes at the site of the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The day also was a significant one in Afghanistan, where the resulting war just wrapped up 2 decades later. NBC's chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel has made his way back into Afghanistan. He joins us from Kabul this morning. Richard, good morning.
Good morning, Savannah. Behind me, especially after the day after the anniversary of 9/11, maybe one of the most jarring images and juxtapositions in the world right now. This used to be the U.S. Embassy here in Kabul, and just below the guard tower is now the Taliban flag. It was from this building during the fall of Kabul that helicopters were taking off, taking diplomats and staff from here, from the center of the city to Kabul airport and then on out of this country. Now the embassy building is empty and this city and all of this country are controlled by the Taliban.
Americans this weekend mourned and remembered the tragic events of 9/11. New York's fallen Twin Towers reborn in light. President Biden laying a wreath for the victims at the Pentagon, where a flag was also unfurled. But it was at the remembrance in Shanksville, where 20 years ago, passengers overpowered hijackers so they couldn't turn another airplane into a missile and kill innocents on the ground, that may have resonated the loudest. Former President Bush, commander-in-chief at the time, delivered what many are calling his most profound statement when he appeared to draw a parallel between 9/11 and January 6th, the day the U.S. Capitol was stormed.
There is little cultural overlap between violent extremists abroad and violent extremists at home. But in their disdainful pluralism, in their disregard for human life, in their determination to defile national symbols, they are children of the same foul spirit.
But are we safer now? In Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden plotted 9/11 while under the protection of the Taliban, politics have come full circle. After President Biden pulled out all U.S. troops this summer, the American-backed Afghan government and army collapsed, and the Taliban quickly swept back into power. The group's white flag now flies over the presidential palace. The Taliban have promised to be different, to never host terrorists again, and to even relax some of their strict Islamic laws. They're allowing girls and women to go to school, including universities and higher education, but separated from men. Women are also required to wear veils, common in much of the Muslim world, and not, for now, the all-covering burqas. But the Taliban have made it clear they are the ones who will decide how tolerant they will be and at their pace.
And Richard, this is the first time you've been able to go back to Kabul since the evacuations. You've been there in all situations, in all circumstances. What is it like right now to be there? What is daily life there?
Well, the city is quite calm, and that is surprising. I was here during the fall of Kabul when the government collapsed, when the president escaped during the evacuation of this embassy. Then I was here throughout the evacuation, the airlift, as people were rushing to the airport. And there were great scenes of chaos, great scenes of death when a suicide bomber attacked the airport during the evacuation. Now, the Taliban are firmly in charge, and if anything, they are trying to pull back. They are pulling back from the streets. They are taking some of the weapons that they captured from U.S. forces. They captured from Afghan forces, and they're taking them off the streets. They've formed a new government. There are no women in the government. They are trying to make some outreach toward women, allowing them to go to higher education. No agreement about what the future curriculum would be. So we are in a new phase for Afghanistan, and it feels very much like the U.S. chapter has ended here. The American chapter of military operations, but it is a brand new chapter starting right now for the 40 million Afghan people who are trying to adjust to new life under the Taliban. And even the Taliban don't exactly know how far they want to go, how similar they want to be to the fundamentalists who were in power 20 years ago and hosted Osama bin Laden and had some of the most draconian Islamic laws in place on the planet.
Richard Engel in Kabul again for us. Richard, thank you very much.
In the meantime, the White House is monitoring a new act of defiance from North Korea after it successfully tested a new long-range cruise missile over the weekend. NBC's chief foreign affairs correspondent Andrea Mitchell has more on that. Hey, Andrea, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Hoda. North Korea's state-run media says the country's Academy of Defense Science successfully test-fired the missiles this weekend. The test comes amid rising tensions between President Biden and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Overnight, news signs that North Korea continues to build up its weapons program. The country announcing it successfully launched newly developed long-range cruise missiles, its first missile test in 6 months. The test getting special attention because analysts say it seems to show the first North Korean cruise missile with nuclear capabilities. It is also a sign of the growing arms race between North and South Korea, which the United States is watching closely.
Our goal continues to be the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
North Korea's state-run news agency saying the missile test took place on Saturday and Sunday, launching from an undisclosed location, flying for more than 2 hours before hitting targets 1,500 kilometers away, falling into the country's territorial waters. The country's state-run media also indicating that the nation's leader, Kim Jong-un, had not attended the weekend tests, though he has been seen recently, appearing during a midnight military parade in Pyongyang last week, marking the 73rd anniversary of the country's founding, which stirred international reaction with its images of North Koreans in hazmat suits and a much thinner Kim. The United States Indo-Pacific Command releasing a statement on the launch overnight, saying this activity highlights DPRK's continuing focus on developing its military program and the threat that poses to its neighbors and the international community. North Korea has been expanding its nuclear and missile program since the last summit between Kim and former President Trump failed in 2019. It's unclear whether Kim has achieved his goal of having a nuclear warhead small enough to be carried by this new missile. Hoda?
All right, Andrea Mitchell for us there in Washington. Andrea, thank you.
Lots more to cover this morning. Busy Monday morning. And tomorrow, a historic recall election in California. Craig's on that one.
Savannah, Hoda, good morning. Good morning to you as well. Voters are going to be deciding if Governor Gavin Newsom should be removed from office, an effort that gained ground as the state took a hard hit from the pandemic. And if he is recalled, more than 40 candidates are vying to lead the country's most populous state. NBC national correspondent Miguel Almaguer is in Los Angeles for us with more on what's at stake tomorrow. Miguel, good morning.
Craig, good morning. This special election could make Gavin Newsom just the third governor in U.S. history to be removed from office through a recall. Now, with the President Biden expected to join him on the campaign trail later today, Democrats are hoping to garner enough voters to keep the state in their control.
This morning, all eyes in politics turning to the recall fight in California, where both Democrats and Republicans are previewing their playbooks for the next national election season.
Reject this effort by voting no on this Republican-backed recall.
Governor Newsom has the support of Democratic heavyweights and President Biden, who's expected to join him later today. While his Republican opponents have already started to raise baseless election fraud allegations, the special recall election will decide if Newsom keeps his job. The ballot asks just two questions. First, should Governor Newsom be kept or removed from office? Second, if Newsom is removed, who should replace him? If more than 50% of voters choose to remove Newsom, the candidate with the most votes will become California's new governor. The push to recall Newsom predates the pandemic, while his initial handling of the COVID crisis garnered praise from health experts, a second surge, and the imposition of stay-at-home orders, which shuttered businesses, bolstered critics.
Have you made missteps?
At the end of the day, we did what we thought was right, and we did what the science told us was the most effective non-pharmaceutical intervention.
On the list of 46 replacements, Olympian and reality TV star Caitlyn Jenner, popular YouTuber Kevin Paffrath, and the frontrunner, conservative radio talk show host Larry Elder, who has promised to roll back many of Newsom's COVID rules.
What I'm opposed to are vaccine mandates and face mask mandates.
The special election could lead to California's second gubernatorial recall. The first was in 2003, when Democrat Gray Davis was replaced by Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger.
We can do it.
So far, Democrats have returned more than half of the over 7 million early ballots. But Election Day could bring a slew of Republican voters who are more likely to vote in person and make the recall a reality.
Recent polls suggest Governor Newsom will most likely survive this recall election, but this election will be all about voter turnout, specifically if enough Democrats in this blue state head to the polls. Craig, back to you.
A big day in California tomorrow. Miguel, thank you.
All right, let's head back to Al. Get the rest of the forecast. What you looking at?
That's right. We look at the rest of the country today, and we see some strong storms firing up in the plains. We're going to be looking at that. We've got warm and sunny weather throughout the mid-Atlantic states into the southeast and excessive heat out west. Coincidence? Tropical storm Nicholas and my Nicholas's first day of senior year.
Oh. Back to school day for Nick Roker.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Still ahead, today's first hearing in the sexual assault lawsuit against Prince Andrew, brought by a woman who claims they met through the late Jeffrey Epstein. We're live with what's at stake for the royal and his accuser.
Plus, a history-making weekend of tennis at the U.S. Open, led by the sport's newest sensation, 18-year-old Emma Raducanu. She will join us to celebrate her record-setting run, and we'll have the men's champ, too. But first, this is Today on NBC.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/today. Just go to Indeed.com/today right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/today. Conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
7:30 now. It's a big Monday morning. Check out our plaza. We are having a town hall, a coronavirus and the classroom town hall. These lovely faces you're looking at, those are teachers, they're educators, they're parents, and students are joining as well. We are going to listen to all of their questions and concerns, and guess who's going to answer them? We've got the director of the CDC and the secretary of education. I bet this is so timely. Yes. I mean, we all have questions for our kids. And
in fact, I was just asking some to the education secretary in the green room.
Exactly.
Why not take advantage of the opportunity?
Your questions, parents' questions, teachers, educators, students, everybody's going to get their moment. We'll have that town hall just ahead. Let's get to your headlines here at 7:30. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin says he does not support a proposed $3.5 trillion budget bill for social and environmental spending. Yesterday on Meet the Press, Manchin told Chuck the price tag is too high and there's no reason to rush it through.
I'm just saying that we should be looking at everything, and we're not. And we don't have the need to rush into this and get it done within 1 week because there's some deadline we're meeting or someone's going to fall through the cracks. We've got child nutrition.
That's a key comment because Democrats have no path to pass that budget bill without Manchin's vote in a Senate that is split 50-50.
At least four people were hurt yesterday after an explosion rocked an apartment complex near Atlanta. Drone video shows the scale of the destruction. Four people were taken to the hospital, dozens of others displaced. The cause of that explosion still under investigation this morning, but residents do say there was a strong smell of gas in the area.
Turning to the NFL now, in week one of Sunday Night Football, the Los Angeles Rams only needing three plays to get on the scoreboard. That was the new Rams quarterback, Matthew Stafford, finding Van Jefferson for a 67-yard touchdown pass. L.A. taking the early lead over the Bears, and they never looked back. They went on to win it 34-14. Stafford with three TD tosses in his Rams debut. Coming up in our next hour, by the way, we have a really special story tied to those Rams and how they're using a shared love of football to really help kids in their community.
All right, but first we have a lot more news to get to, including Prince Andrew's legal battle. It's back in the spotlight.
Yeah, the first hearing on the sex abuse lawsuit brought by a woman who says she was just 17 years old at the time is being held in a New York courtroom today. We're going to break down what we expect to happen in just a moment. But first, let's start it with NBC's Kelly Kobiea following the latest from Buckingham Palace. Kelly, good morning.
Good morning to you. Both sides have a lot riding on this pretrial hearing today. It's being held by teleconference in front of a New York judge, and the judge essentially has to decide whether enough effort has been made to serve Prince Andrew with notice that he's being sued civilly for sexual assault. This morning, Prince Andrew back in Scotland visiting his mother, the Queen. In these photos, seen leaving his royal residence in Windsor with his ex-wife, Sarah Ferguson. Lawyers for his accuser, Virginia Roberts Giuffre, say he's trying to evade the civil suit they've filed against him. In court documents, Giuffre's legal team says they've tried serving Prince Andrew and his lawyers by multiple methods, including email, FedEx, and in person at least twice at the prince's home on the private grounds of Windsor. Her lawyers say the second time, August 27th, the police officer allowed the process server to leave the summons and complaint with him at the main gates of the property and stated that he would forward both to Prince Andrew's legal team.
A spokesperson for the senior royal wouldn't comment. But in a letter to the court, the law firm Blackfords, who say they represent Andrew in certain UK matters, but not the civil case, claim Giuffre's lawyers have made several public, well-publicized attempts at irregular service, calling the case complex, adding Giuffre's lawsuit may not be viable. Giuffre, the longtime accuser of late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, is suing Prince Andrew in U.S. federal court. The civil lawsuit filed last month under the Child Victims Act accuses Prince Andrew of touching her in an offensive and sexual manner without her consent, all while knowing she was a sex trafficking victim when she was just 17 years old. Prince Andrew has repeatedly denied the allegations, telling the BBC in 2019,
"I have no recollection of ever meeting this lady. None whatsoever."
In the same interview, he also suggested this photo at Ghislaine Maxwell's house in London was doctored, saying,
"And I do not remember anything."
Giuffre told Savannah in an exclusive interview that Maxwell first introduced her to Prince Andrew the night that photo was taken.
"I couldn't believe it. Prince Andrew, of course, denies that this ever happened. He's going to keep denying that it ever happened, but he knows the truth."
And in a statement in August, Giuffre said, "I am holding Prince Andrew accountable for what he did to me. The powerful and rich are not exempt from being held responsible for their actions." If the judge rules in favor of Giuffre and her lawyers, Prince Andrew would have to respond to that civil lawsuit within 21 days of being served. And Giuffre's lawyers say that would put the deadline just a few days away, this Friday, September 17th. Savannah?
All right, Kelly, thank you very much. And joining us now is NBC's newest legal analyst, Tali Farhadian-Weinstein, a former federal and state prosecutor here in New York. Tali, good morning. Welcome. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Good morning, Savannah.
So this is an ultimate lawyer's argument about whether process was served, whether the legal papers were properly served on the prince. But it really comes down to it, beyond the technical argument. Are they going to be able to make Prince Andrew answer in a New York courtroom?
Well, you know, that remains to be seen, Savannah. But I think you're right that today is about technicalities, and I don't think that it's going to be an effective legal strategy for him to hide at his mother's castle for too much longer and say, "You can't catch me."
Well, is this
so we're going to get past this.
Yeah, stalling tactic. Because the whole idea of, was I properly served with processes? Did I get notice? Is it fair or is it not fair? He certainly is aware they have to meet the technical requirements, but is stalling a decent legal strategy?
I think it is not, because even if they have not met the legal requirements, and I believe that they have, then I expect the judge to instruct her lawyers on how to go ahead and do that. So I think he is going to be served, and the case is going to start. He can then, of course, continue to stonewall, in which case a default judgment will be entered against him.
Well, before we get to that, if he gets in the case, let's say this morning it goes forward, he was properly served, the case can start. As a practical matter, what does that mean? Can he be forced to answer questions under oath in a deposition?
Well, so there's a court order now that says that after he is served, he will have 3 weeks to answer her allegations, right? And if he does not do that, then it's really up to the court to say, "I can make a judgment now," and maybe to ask her or him, and again, he might continue not to answer, for more information, particularly so the court can make a decision about damages, right? She's asked for money damages, but she hasn't specified the amount.
And then finally, I mean, I know these are complex issues, but does he have an argument that he's immune? Because he is the son of the queen. Is there a sovereign immunity issue here?
Yeah. Well, those are arguments that he has to come to court to make. And as you know, he hasn't even entered an appearance. He doesn't have any lawyers representing him. This is going to be a one-way argument today. So all of that is something that he would have to actually recognize the court, you know, first, in order to be able to talk about, and that would be part of the litigation.
All right. Well, this is the very first step, Tali. Thank you so much. Nice to have you with us. Guys, over to you.
Up next, we're going to turn our attention to tennis and one of the youngest Grand Slam champions ever.
Get ready to fall in love, 18-year-old Emma Raducanu. Wow, the U.S. Open crowd. She'll join us to talk about her historic victory and getting a shout-out from the queen herself. Plus, our conversation with the history-making men's champ as well, coming up right after this.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We are back 7:42 on this Monday morning with the bright young tennis stars who shine throughout the U.S. Open.
I mean, what an open it was. 25-year-old Daniil Medvedev took the men's crown last night and on Saturday. That's her. 18-year-old Emma Raducanu, now it's like a star is born. She's in the spotlight.
She became the first British person in 53 years to win the U.S. Open, and that's not the only way she made history. We're going to chat with Emma in just a moment, but first, much more on a remarkable weekend at the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open closing in a stunning fashion. 18-year-old Emma Raducanu and 25-year-old Daniil Medvedev both taking home their first Grand Slam titles. In his third Grand Slam final, Medvedev controlling every set against the favored and ranked number one, Novak Djokovic. The upset victory costing Djokovic his Grand Slam dream of winning four in one season.
So what kind of a head game did you have to play with yourself to stay in it?
Crowd was completely going for him. It was really crazy. I knew that I have to stay focused on myself.
Medvedev speaking out about his win with us earlier this morning. You and Novak shared a really lovely moment at the net right after.
For me, it's just an inspiration to see a person like this. And
on the women's side, Emma Raducanu swept through the Open without losing a set and defeating fellow team sensation Leyla Fernandez in the final. The British teenager becoming the first qualifier ever to win a Grand Slam title.
Focusing on what I had to do and my process and the mindset just really helped.
Her triumph setting off a giant celebration. Family and friends back home in the UK erupting in cheers. And even the Queen praising her remarkable achievement. A rising star with an inspiring new record on and off the court. And we are so thrilled to be joined right now by Emma Raducanu, your 2021 U.S. Open champion. Hi, Emma. Good morning and congratulations.
Hi, morning. Thank you very much.
I just imagine you making your U.S. Open plans a few weeks ago. You weren't even in the main draw. You had to play three qualifying matches to even get into it. Was there any thought in your mind, even teensy tiny, hey, maybe I'll come home the U.S. Open champion?
No, not at all. I mean, 3 weeks ago, I did not think I would last the whole trip. I thought that I'd be home in a week after qualifying. But, I mean, I've just been doing my best to take care of every single day individually and to the best of my abilities. And then 3 weeks later, the time's flown and I was holding the trophy at the end. But yeah, it was the best time of my life here.
Well, before the U.S. Open, before Wimbledon, I think the most people you said you played in front of was like 100 people. I don't know if you heard Miss Guthrie, but I think she was screaming in the audience for
right
you.
There.
But would you explain, I was just thinking about you right before you stepped out onto the court, like what you must have felt like. Were your nerves out of control or were you calm?
I think before the match, there were a little bit of pre-match nerves in terms of something just didn't feel quite 100% and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. It's just a weird feeling, but I think that's as part of the build-up and everything. But as soon as I got out onto court and was just doing what I've done 100 times before, playing and just focusing on the point and tactics and not trying to get caught up in anything, the occasion, I felt completely normal, and it was a great level match because Leyla played incredible tennis and we were literally throwing everything at each other. And I'm just very proud to have come through some tough moments at the end, especially.
Well, she's an amazing player too. I have a feeling you guys might meet again on the court. What's your plan now, Emma? I mean, it's finally, I think, the end of tennis season. It's the longest season. You're going to bring your trophy home. I mean, who have you heard from besides, you know, the Queen and Duchess Kate?
Yeah, I mean, I was very, very honored to have received a note from Her Majesty and the Duchess. So I am, very grateful. I have got some congratulations, but I haven't really checked my phone yet still. I'm still just trying to really let this moment sink in. And I had a really nice night with my team the night of the final. And, yeah, we just discussed and reflected upon an incredible 3 weeks.
And lastly, Emma, what about mom and dad? I know they didn't make the trip, but how proud is that, is your dad?
Yeah, they're definitely proud and happy. I mean, they're my toughest critics and so hard to please. So, yeah, I got them this time, though.
You sure did. You didn't even drop one set the whole time. Yeah. I mean, Emma, you made history. Yeah. First ever to go through qualies and make it all the way to the final. So your name's in the history book. It's etched on that trophy. Are you going to pack it with you? Do you send it FedEx? Does it sit on your lap on the plane home? What do we do with that?
Yeah, that's coming with me right by my side. I'm not trusting any sort of other luggage that I'm getting checked. So, I can't believe I get to bring it home. And I got to see my name engraved on the wall with the past champions. And I thought that was pretty special to just be on the same board as them.
Well, seeing Virginia Wade in the audience and Billie Jean handing you that trophy. Congratulations, Emma. We're super proud of you. That's great.
Thank you very much.
She's delightful.
She is.
I know. Star is born.
And that accent.
And Layla, too.
To see that in person must have been something.
It was.
But to see that in person with the people sitting next to you must have been even better.
Okay,
look. I want. Here's
a
quiz. Don't tell.
This was yesterday.
I know, but don't. Okay, whatever. Don't tell. We know Bradley Cooper is the guy on the right. The guy between Savannah and Bradley Cooper. Let's play the game. Who is that man?
I know.
Well, you do know.
Well, you were right there, Al, with me.
I didn't know until 5 seconds.
Well, neither did my mom. It's Brad Pitt. You know, just
Stop
how you
it.
Do.
Yes.
There's Henry and Jenna. There's my husband, Mike. Al. Let's see Al and Deborah right behind
Al and Deborah.
Us. I mean,
who's behind you?
Hendrik Lundqvist.
Wait, who's behind you? Is that Hugh Jackman? And
No, that's a famous hockey player.
Hendrik Lundqvist.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Okay. The hockey player.
We got Mariska Hargitay.
You got Gail King.
Is there.
Wait, did you play the game?
Rami Malek was way over there.
What?
Oh, my gosh, it was ridiculous. I was like Forrest Gump. This isn't even a real picture. I just photoshopped myself in.
Yeah, Laverne Cox was up there.
It was.
Quite the section.
If there was a trophy for good seats, we had them.
You guys definitely did.
And free M&Ms.
I like it.
That's how you were. Trying to play it cool. With Brad.
I could tell you.
I wasn't very cool.
Like,
I was trying to.
Although Hoda, I mean, Jenna made you switch so she could sit next to
her. Of course she did.
Oh, Jenna horned in on my
musical
seat later.
Yeah, she did.
She
had to.
Mm-hmm.
Still ahead, a remarkable youth football program making a huge difference and getting a surprise boost from the LA Rams. But first, these messages. Just ahead, our coronavirus in the classroom town hall live on our plaza.
And here to answer your questions, the head of the CDC and the Secretary of Education, along with parents, students, and teachers from across the country. Coming up, your 8 o'clock hour.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.